So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to Trending. We are kicking into this third week of Advent. Later on in the show, we'll talk about this theme that we've been working on all week of joy. And we'll turn to the Blessed Virgin Mary today and talk about Mary's cause for our joy. We're also going to discuss a new study that's come out about the family. That is, who wants to get married and who wants to have babies in a post-COVID, I suppose we could say, world. Coming up in just a moment will be Reggie Littlejohn. She's the founder of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. You've heard her before here on Trending. Her company or her organization is the only organization with boots on the ground in China facing what's happening in face of everything with the Chinese Communist Party that has enforced horrible abortion laws and restrictions, forced sterilization, forced abortion over the years. And we're going to talk about this in relation to the 2022 Winter Olympics that are scheduled to happen in Beijing, which people are jumping on to a boycott regarding because of the absolute genocide that's occurring there in China. So she'll join us to discuss that, as well as we'll discuss more of her incredible story with her work that she had the opportunity to do with Mother Teresa. She shared parts of her story before here on Trending. Who else has worked with a saint? Not many people. And she'll share today a little bit about working in the Home for the Dying there in Calcutta with Saint Mother Teresa. So joining us now is Reggie Littlejohn. Welcome back to Trending, Reggie.
Hello. Thank you for having me back, Timory.
It's a joy to speak with you. You are on the ground doing so much to save the babies as well as their mothers there in China in the face of the forced child policies that have existed for years now. And we've discussed much of this where, you know, we've seen the child policy change from 1 to 2 to 3. And yet right now we're seeing in the face of ongoing oppression for the people of China, more has come up with the Olympics occurring. We have this recent announcement on December 6th that the United States has said that they will not send any U.S. officials to the Beijing Winter Olympics in 2022. Can you give us a big picture of what's going on, why this is significant for most of us, I think, who really aren't paying attention to what's happened?
Well, Timory, the issue is significant. I would contend that the Biden administration's response to it, the diplomatic boycott, is not as significant as I would like it to be. So the reason that I'm the co-chair of the genocidegames.org, Stop the Beijing Olympics Task Force, and we would like to see the games entirely moved or boycotted because of the genocide that's going on in Xinjiang. So you mentioned that China has moved to a three-child policy. Well, that doesn't really stop the coercion, because the situation is that, you know, every married couple is allowed to have three children. So single moms are still forcibly aborted. Fourth children can be forcibly aborted. And they're committing genocide against the Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang, meaning forced abortion, forced sterilization, systematic rape, the internment of 1 to 3 million Uyghurs, forced labor, separating kids from their parents. It just goes on and on and on. And the United States, along with over 150 other countries, is a signatory to the 1948 Genocide Convention. And that convention legally requires all of its signatories to undertake to prevent and punish genocide. And we have officially designated the Chinese Communist Party as committing genocide, so we are legally bound to undertake to prevent and punish that. And part of that should be not honoring them with the Olympic Games. So the Tokyo Games were delayed for a year because of COVID. And what we're saying is, if the Games can be delayed for a year because of COVID, why can't they be delayed for a year because of genocide and be held somewhere else so that the athletes are not forced to, you know, compete on soil that's running with the blood of genocide?
Right. And just to be clear, we're talking about people who are literally being murdered, tortured, their babies are being aborted, they're being sterilized, and this isn't anything new. This has been going on for years in China, and yet we continue to allow this to go on. And so it's not just the United States, however, that has held this 1948 Genocide Convention. What other countries have also signed on to this, and what has their response been to the Olympics being held in Beijing this coming winter?
Well, there's over 150 countries that have signed the Genocide Convention, and the international response is other countries like Canada, Australia, I think the UK have all announced diplomatic boycotts. And the thing that's ironic about this, Timmy, is what a diplomatic boycott means is just that the diplomats will not attend. And the thing that's ironic about it is that China made a very smart and sly move in October, which is they decided that they did not that they were not going to invite anyone to the Olympics. There would be no international spectators to the Olympics, and they blamed COVID for that. And they're going to fill their stadiums
that's
with compliant Chinese people who are just going to be applauding, et cetera. I believe that the reason that they did that is because they didn't want to have these things like diplomatic boycotts. And what they're saying now, one Chinese official recently said, you know, I don't understand why U.S. officials are hyping this diplomatic boycott when they haven't even been invited to the games.
Wow. I mean, if that doesn't say anything, and I mean, if we look at this big picture, clearly China does not want the world. The Chinese Communist Party does not want the world flocking to China right now to see the true oppression that has been ongoing for those people. Yet they want the benefit and the prestige of building up the infrastructure that occurs with the Olympics and bringing all these Olympic athletes in. Now, some things have happened over the last 6 months that I think has brought in greater international attention to this. For example, even the missing Chinese tennis star, Peng Shuai, who went missing for nearly 3 weeks. Can you explain a little bit as to what happened and why that's very concerning yet again?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. So people should go on Twitter. There's a hashtag of where is Peng Shuai? And Peng Shuai is an international tennis star, very highly placed in the Women's Tennis Association, one of the top players in the world. She went on Weibo, which is the Chinese equivalent of Twitter, and accused one of the top officials in China. He was a retired, very senior official. She accused him of raping her. Okay, so this is like the Chinese, I guess, Me Too movement. That was incredibly brave. I mean, she had to know that she was taking her own safety and the safety of her family into her hands. That is such a public shaming of the Chinese Communist Party. So what happened is she disappeared. She disappeared for about 3 weeks, and the Women's Tennis Association, which has more, I don't know, I'm not going to make an off-color joke on your show, but they have more of something than the NFL and the NBA, who have been kowtowing to the Chinese Communist Party. They stood up and said, where is Peng Shuai? We are very, very worried about her. And so what happened is that the Chinese government trotted her out in these highly choreographed events in which she was never allowed to actually speak, but to show that she was okay. And then she had, interestingly enough, an interview with the International Olympics Committee, not the Women's Tennis Association, the International Olympics Committee, where she said she was fine and she was just home resting. Well, that didn't convince anyone. And the Women's Tennis Association is continuing to pursue this. But it's another reason to boycott the games. It's like a regime that is disappearing women athletes does not deserve to host the games.
Yes. Well, and I keep thinking of the case of Chen Guncheng that you were at the center of helping to fight for his release, someone who spoke up against the forced abortion policy there in China, and the Communist Chinese Party didn't like it. They put him under house arrest. They tortured him and his wife. Everything that happened to his extended family, they bully people. And so, of course, I imagine this tennis star, Peng Shuai, who is now back in the public eye, but just claiming she rested, She was threatened. Her family was threatened. And what do many people whose families have been threatened do? They become quiet. And this is what has continued to go on by the Chinese Communist Party. And this brings us, Reggie, to what do we do in the face of this? You know, people will say, well, you're asking me to boycott the Olympics, but look at all the hard work of the athletes. You're asking me to boycott the Olympics, but we're just a couple months away. Is this realistic? Do you see this as realistic? People moving the Olympics or actually boycotting it? And will this be helpful?
You know something, Kimberly? Where there's a will, there's a way. And if people rise up and say, we need to move the games, I think that it can happen. So, I mean, so what people can do is they can go on to the website. I'm the co-sponsor of this website, along with the Committee on the Present Danger of China. So the website is called StopVaxPassportStop.org. I'm going to spell that. Stop and then V-A. Oh, no, not that one. GenocideGames.org. Genocide, G-E-N-O-C-I-D-E. games.org, and there's a petition there that the Chinese Communist Party does not deserve to host these games, and our first choice would be to move them. I mean, if there were a worldwide movement, then there's another hashtag, move the games, okay, that's on Twitter. I think that they could be moved, but you know, people need to rise up, because otherwise things are just grinding to the end that they will occur. And this is the thing, Timory. These games, the 2022 Olympic Games in Beijing, are very sort of soberly to be compared with the 1936 Games in Berlin, Germany, where Hitler Yes. legitimated his genocidal regime and then afterwards invaded Europe. And it's my concern that if China is allowed to have these games, that they will just use it as a legitimization of themselves, and who knows what they will do with that. They could invade Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that athletes, reporters, anyone who attends the Olympics are at risk?
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's absolutely the other thing. You know, a good friend of mine who shall remain nameless because I'm going to disagree with him, but he was like, oh, I agree with Reggie, but I think that maybe we should let the athletes go and then they can stand up for freedom at the games. No, they cannot. I mean, boy, would that be something. I wonder what the Chinese Communist Party would do with an athlete who unfurled they unfurled a banner saying stop the genocide or something as they were, you know, winning the gold medal or up on the podium. I wonder what they would do. But the athletes are at risk on a number of fronts. Number one, boy, who knows what would happen to them if they spoke out against the regime from Chinese soil? That's number one. Then number two, they are for sure going to be under surveillance. I mean, you know, they're going to be every one of their move, everything they do, everything they say, everywhere they go, what they eat, what they buy, what they meet with, is going to be under surveillance. Because that's the way that China is. It's just a total surveillance state. And then number three, you know, they could have their DNA collected. Like, I don't know what the medical requirements are. I know that if you're not vaccinated, they have given an option of being tested, but also being quarantined for like 3 weeks, which anybody who's quarantined for 3 weeks before competing in the games is for sure putting themselves in the position of not being able to win, right? So it's almost like forced vaccination. But they can collect their DNA through blood tests, through COVID PCR tests or whatever. And the Chinese Communist Party has stated that they want to build like super warriors in their military. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, what better way to build super warriors than with a DNA of Olympic athletes from all over the world?
Wow. Now, some people may be shocked and overwhelmed by ideas such as these, but with what we've seen with everything that's occurred during COVID over the last couple of years and the ongoing and increasing threat that China has become, and you'd think that the International Olympics Committee, as well as all of the nations who signed back in 1948 the Genocide Convention, with the responsibility that they hold, which the United States itself holds, to prevent and punish countries, places that participate in this, that we would be doing more. And this is why it's such a big deal that your organization, and people can find more about this at genocidegames.org, are calling for the moving of the Olympics or the boycotting. Like you said, COVID led to the delaying of Olympics. We too can do this now. In the face of what's happening, where people are literally dying, being raped, forcefully aborted, and sterilized. And this is nothing new for China. And so we're not only talking about the moral issues of abortion, of sterilization, or of genocide. We're talking about as well the ongoing threat that China is and will continue to be if this goes on.
Right. It is. What this does is it demonstrates that the world is willing to just give them a pass on the worst atrocities that are happening in the world today because of our economic relationship. And so they're just going to use that to commit even greater atrocities.
That's Reggie Littlejohn. She's the founder of Women's Rights Without Frontiers. We've been talking about the Winter Olympics in Beijing being held in China. I'd like to come back with Reggie Littlejohn, which I've shared with you before, that she is the person whose organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers, which you can find online, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org, is the only organization with people on the ground in China helping women who would otherwise have their children forcefully aborted or choose abortion because of the child policy that they have been used to there in China. She goes in to help save babies and save these families from the poverty and the forced absolute abuse that occurs for these families in China. We're going to come back sharing a little bit of her own story and inspiration of what led her to do the work that she does today. As she worked with St. Mother Teresa in the slums in Calcutta, especially working in the home for the dying in the leprosarium. We'll be right back here on Trending with Reggie Littlejohn. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Joining me now is Reggie Littlejohn. She is the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, helping to stop forced abortion and sterilization, as well as a genocide, and specifically sex selective abortion worldwide, especially focusing in on China and doing more work in India as the years go on. We know that forced abortion, as we've been discussing here on Trending with Reggie, has been a serious issue in China, although the expansion of the so-called 1-to-3 child policy and so on has changed. That still means that unless you're married, you are forced to have an abortion if you find yourself pregnant or if the government doesn't give you permission based on how many children are already in your family. And so to talk a little bit about what inspired her to do the work that she does today, we were joined by Reggie Littlejohn a couple weeks ago to talk about her work with St. Mother Teresa. She spent quite a bit of time there in Calcutta with St. Mother Teresa, caring for the infants as well as the disabled, dying, and even those who were suffering from leprosy. And one of the parts of her story that we didn't have the opportunity to talk about, Reggie, was how you worked for the Home for the Dying and Leprosarium in Calcutta alongside St. Mother Teresa. Can you share with us a little bit more about this particular experience?
Well, the Home for the Dying was an amazing place. So it was in one of the deepest, I guess, slums, you would say, in Calcutta. It's called Kaligat. And Mother Teresa started that home when she picked up one dying sufferer from leprosy off of the street. So when I first arrived at Kaligat, and I was there with my husband, we walked in the door, and there was immediately to my left a casket with a man's body in it. And I don't know how graphic you want me to be, but, you know, his skin had like...
Yeah.
All right. I don't know what, you know, his skin had a big problem in it that you could see. I mean, I don't know how graphic you want me to be, okay? But the thing that was amazing about him is that his around his neck was like a lay of flowers, and there were flowers all over the casket, all over his body. And this, and so what it showed me was what the first man that Mother Teresa picked up, he said, "I've lived like a dog, but I'm going to die like an angel." That these people were cared for. They were taken off the streets where they were just going to die alone and brought in, and they were, you know, some of the people did survive. I mean, actually, if they're just dying of starvation or something, with care, they could actually walk out of Kali Ghat. But a lot of them did die, but they just appreciated hugely being able to die with dignity, to be able to die in a place where people cared about them, where they were taken off their cots and bathed every day and fed if they were able to, you know, eat. One thing that I did a lot of that the women loved is it's like an Indian custom to rub people's skin with oil. So I brought in, you know, some like skin lotion and would rub people's skin and their backs with it. And oh my goodness, they just loved that. So it was just a place to just love people as, you know, as a lot of them were dying.
I can't even imagine being able to be there and having the willingness to help minister to people who are dying of leprosy, who are in kind of this environment that so few of us are exposed to. You know, today when we think of the ill and the dying, we think of often such sanitary environments within the context of a hospital. But being in a third world country and seeing the lack of, you could even argue, those types of sanitary environments, to still be able to show that mercy and that compassion, and even, you know, get your hands dirty in the face of it. Did that experience, was it something that you went into willingly, or was it hard for you stepping into it to begin with?
Well, it's progressive. So in the very beginning, I was very worried about germs. And by the way, people with leprosy were not dying in Kali Ghat. They were in the leprosarium. And I will talk about the leprosarium, but they separated people out that had leprosy because it is contagious. You kind of get thrown in with the germs without even knowing it. So I had a couple of experiences of that. Like, there was this one woman that I held who was dying, and I was told that she had non-contagious pulmonary edema. So she was struggling to breathe, and I was holding her, and she was, you know, breathing right in, you know, right into my face, all right? And I just held her, and I was there for her, and then she died, and then later on, the doctor said that she had rip-roaring pneumonia, which is contagious. So I wouldn't have held her like that if I'd known that she had pneumonia. But I'm glad I did, because I did not get pneumonia. See? So I was put in that situation without knowing it, and I was able to be a huge support to her because I didn't know it. Now, I'll tell you another story where I went to a place for people or women who were suffering from mental illness, and I walked in the door, and all these women just rushed up to me. I just, you know, like, wanted to hold me or touch me, or I don't know what it was, but anyway, they were all around me and like on me, literally, except for this one woman at the very back of the room, and she was just sitting there very calmly, and she was a very beautiful young woman. I mean, I'll just never forget her beauty and her grace as she just sat there quietly by herself. So I went to her, and as I walked to her, all the other women just kind of disappeared, like they didn't want to go near her. I had no idea what was going on. So I sat down on the bed next to her, and she looked at me really sadly. And, you know, I couldn't speak Bengali. She couldn't speak English. And she just showed me her hands. And on the palms of her hands, it looked like she had baby powder on the palms of her hands, right? So I just looked at her hands, and she looked at me really sadly, and I took her hands in my hands, and I ran my hands over her hands. It was clear that she was just very sad about her hands, and I couldn't understand why. I just sat there with her and just felt a lot of love for her, and also confusion, like, you know, why? I don't understand this thing with her hands. So then it was time to go, so I left, and I was walking out the of the building with the sister there. And I said, what's going on with that, with the young woman at the back of the room? And she said, oh, she has leprosy. I said, what? This is supposed to be a home for the, you know, for women who have, are suffering with mental illness. What is she doing there? She said, oh, well, she's in transit towards our leprosarium, and we just put them here, you know, for a day. And I was shocked, and I was really concerned, and I just ran back to my room and took my clothes off and jumped in the shower, and I don't know whether I burned my clothes or what I did, but I was scrubbing myself and just really worried that I was going to end up with leprosy. And this is before I understood that leprosy is really not contagious, hardly at all. But it was another situation where I became just a very beautiful and loving presence to somebody because I actually did not know what their problem was.
You didn't
was.
Know, right?
I didn't know. So right. I'm not going to be getting any merit in heaven for that. I just thought she was a beautiful young woman. I didn't understand about the leprosy. Apparently, you know, in the very beginning, leprosy looks like a powder on your hands. I didn't know that. But I'm glad that I did that because I wouldn't have done it if I'd known that she had leprosy. I didn't know. And I'm sure that I was a very healing presence for her and that God used me to be a healing presence to her by preventing me from knowing actually what her problem was.
Well, Reggie, as I keep thinking of what you're sharing about working in the home for the dying and working with this woman in the area with women who had a mental illness, today, especially in a COVID world with everything from vaccines and the vaccine debate even prior to COVID between those who are unvaccinated versus vaccinated and now today over the COVID vaccination status, we've almost reached a point in society where we have a diseased view of the human person. And it can be in either direction. Those people who are vaccinated thinking this way about those who are unvaccinated, or those who are unvaccinated in a certain respect thinking that way about those who are vaccinated. And sometimes I think of the work of St. Mother Teresa and some of the other great saints we've had, such as St. Damien of Molokai, and they didn't see that perspective that is so polarizing and uncharitable that we're creating in a rather, you know, sanitary environment when they weren't in those sanitary environments. They took risks. They saw needs. They stepped over cultural, religious, and even risky boundaries such as illness. And I'm curious as to what you think about the attitudes that we have today with COVID in the face of your experience of working with St. Mother Teresa with the dying and in the leprosarium.
Well, I have little doubt that St. Mother Teresa would have been very opposed to the way that the churches and the masses have been shut down. In the Middle Ages, during the plague, I mean, talk about a communicable disease that was completely deadly and a horrible death, okay? The Catholic churches were open, and Catholics were going to people, you know, with the plague and trying to minister to them and risking their lives. But the thing is that's so sad about it is that people today, some of our first responders, some of the people on the front lines, like the doctors and nurses, before there was a vaccine, they were very similar to these heroic Catholics and going in and serving the people who had COVID and exposing themselves to it heroically, and then not wanting to get the vaccine, and all of a sudden they're being fired. Okay, so they go from being a hero to being fired almost overnight. I think that there's a lot to think about there.
I keep thinking of the story of Little Women and the five March sisters. Have you watched or seen, I'm sure, Little Women before, right?
Oh, I read the book over and over again. Yes. When I was a kid.
Yes, I remember being read it as a child as well. Well, in Little Women, I keep thinking of the story of one of the middle sisters, Beth March, who she would go and care for a family who was very poor, and eventually family members end up becoming sick and many of them die, but she cared and cared for this little infant, and she does end up contracting the disease. It makes her, leads her to have a very weak constitution for a number of years, and she does eventually end up dying. And I think of her story, and her story is one that is so beloved and beautifully powerful because she loved others enough to go in, even in a risky situation. She saw the person, she didn't see the illness. And I think that that's the challenge we have today, confronting each and every single one of us. And I think will continue to be a newfound challenge for a number of years ahead of us. Any thoughts?
Well, yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the leprosarium, because you go to these places and you find out what your limits are. So I went to the leprosarium, and it was a very interesting place. This is where I learned about how really not communicable leprosy is. It's very hard to contract it. And the leprosarium, all of Mother Teresa's saris and towels and all the linens are made by people suffering from leprosy in the leprosarium. So anyway, I can talk more about that. But the point I'm getting at right now is that there were people there who would come there on an emergency basis because leprosy is a disease of the nervous system. So what can happen is if somebody suffering with leprosy falls asleep at night next to a fire, he or she might not know that their feet are getting, burned. Mm. And so then they can end up with gangrene and all kinds of stuff, and then there has to be an amputation. So the doctor at the leprosarium kind of befriended me and invited me to come back the next day to help her with the amputations.
Oh, goodness.
And I just said, I'm sorry, I'm busy tomorrow. I mean, it's like, I couldn't deal with it. I mean, I knew that this would be a good thing to do. I knew that she needed help. I knew that the people suffering from leprosy needed to be amputated, but I just was not prepared to go in there and help with amputations right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying, is you learn your limits when you go there.
And in face of everything we're seeing today in our nation, this great divide, this diseased view of the human person based on COVID, the vaccine status, and so forth, we all have to kind of find our limit, but finding it with the charity and finding it without creating a division. There's one thing to know your limit, but it's another thing to support a division in society that's occurring today.
Well, right. So this is the thing. Helping with amputations, but I have no medical background. I was in law school at the time, okay? If I could do amputations, I would have gone to medical school. It's like I can't. But what I'm saying is I knew my limit, but I was not judging the doctor or anyone else for doing what they were doing.
Right.
And that's the difference with this vaccine controversy, is that people are judging each other. So people who are not vaccinated are can be judgmental towards people who are vaccinated, and people who are vaccinated can be judgmental towards people who are unvaccinated. And there's a divide there that is very concerning, because the mainstream media is promoting a culture of almost, they're calling it a pandemic of the unvaccinated. I just did a webinar today where the doctors or the statistician and the scientists were saying this is not a pandemic of the unvaccinated; it's actually a pandemic of the vaccinated. And so, anyway, that's on that's going to be on StopVaxPassports.org. Point is that the mainstream media and even Joe Biden, president, was saying, you need to get vaccinated; our patience is wearing out, and doing all these mandates, so that we could end up like Australia, where the unvaccinated are put in quarantine camps, and they're starting that also in Austria, and it's very, very concerning, because it's not like it's without consequences. I mean, this division in our society that even comes down to families, dividing families could end up being extremely serious for people who are not vaccinated. So I'm very worried about it.
Isn't that far away? Yeah, and I mean, our recent history here in the United States, even of the idea of segregation, we're seeing a new form of segregation occurring within our country today. And, you know, even everything from what we were talking about with what's happening with the Olympics in China, it's a reminder for us that we need to pay attention. We need to remember that as people of faith, our faith needs to be at the heart of our approach to everything that we do. Yes, caution is important, but we cannot continue to support this divide that is occurring, often unnecessarily, even among us, a people of faith, because we're not having the compassion, the love, and the charity in the face of the culture we're living in. We're going to look back in history, and I don't think we'll be proud as Americans as to how we've handled this crisis.
I agree. And, you know, I think the people who are vaccinated and unvaccinated need to view each other, stop viewing each other with suspicion. Because it's almost like we live in alternate universes. You know, people who listen to the mainstream media, I mean, you're getting one side of the story, and people who listen to the alternative media are getting the completely opposite side of the story. And if people would listen to each other, I think that it would help a lot. I really want to commend this Stop Vax Passport. I really think people should get onto that website. We have three outstanding webinars. One is about the vaccine passport, the digital one being used as a tool of mass surveillance and social control, similar to China's social credit system. The second one has to do with vaccine mandates against the military and how that this is a national security, potential national security catastrophe. And the third one is the problem with mandating vaccines towards children. Okay, that there's no need for it. It's actually quite bad for them. And the one that we just did today has to do with natural immunity and its superiority to vaccinated immunity. And the fact that it's not recognized by the government or the CDC is what allows them to say that we're still in a pandemic and in a crisis. Because if you put natural immunity together with all the people who've been vaccinated, you end up with herd immunity, and then they don't have the excuse to say this is, we need these emergency use authorizations to take people's freedoms away. So,
and what's at the heart of what you're talking about is the problem of the mandate, the problem of concern surrounding the vaccine passport, especially with the work you've done there in China to help people understand the power that it's had in the technology of the vaccine passport, which we've talked about here on training. We'll actually have to include a link to that episode where we discussed the risk factor in that, but you have so much that you're doing surrounding the genocide games, which you can find and sign the petition to call for the moving of the Olympics by going to genocidegames.com. You also have stopthevaccinepassport.com or org.
Well, both of those .org. Genocidegames.org, stopvaxpassports.org, and then my main website, which is Women's Rights Without Frontiers.org, and that's about our work saving baby girls from gendercide and also just grinding poverty in China. And widows we're saving as well.
Well, Reggie, thank you for everything that you're doing and for being a voice for those who are suffering, who have been ill, who are facing forced abortion, but especially for this nation in the face of everything that we have ahead of us with the Winter Olympics 2022. Please follow her work at womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. Get involved. We'll post links in the podcast notes for today's show, as well as on social media if you would like to do more on any of these topics. That's been Reggie Littlejohn here on Trending with Timory. I'll be right back.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending. I'd like to dive into a new study that has come out regarding people and whether or not they're willing to get married or have children in the face of everything we've experienced over the last couple of years in a post-COVID world. I'd also like to dive into this topic of Advent and how this week is the third week of Advent. We just celebrated Gaudete Sunday. It's when we see the pink, or to be politically correct when it comes to our priests, the rose vestments come out, and this marks joy, Gaudete Sunday. And one of the themes in this week as we look at that third Advent candle is we're supposed to be prayerful in pondering this as a virtue, but we turn to specifically Our Lady, who in the Litany of Loretto actually has a title called Cause of Our Joy. And in this title, some people might wonder, well, how can Mary be the cause of our joy? Wouldn't you turn to Christ as the cause of our joy? And one of the neat meditations when pondering the Litany of Loretto is in the week of the third week of Advent, focusing on joy, we see that the reason for her being the cause of joy is because she said yes to her, in the respect to her consent to the great conception of Christ, to the incarnation of Jesus Christ. And even in the face of so many of her other titles, for example, we have Our Lady's title, such as Our Lady of Sorrows, we see this contradiction within our own lives as people of faith, where there is at times a season of sorrow. There can be a season of joy, or should I say happiness, that is fleeting. It's emotional. It comes and goes. But joy in and of itself is grace. It's a grace from God Himself. And when we look at Our Lady as cause of our joy, we see in her that she is the model for understanding what it means to be joyful, but also she was part of the means of ushering in that joy, that is the gratitude for Christ in the incarnation, and ultimately gratitude in Christ for what he would bestow upon us and the great gift of opportunity for salvation and union with him. And so I wanted to ponder this just for a moment as we take this theme of joy all throughout the week with us, that title, Mary, Cause of Our Joy, her capacity to give her fiat was because of the grace that she was overflowing with. You see, that grace that led her to be predisposed, trusting and willing in her response at the time of the what we know as the incarnation. And so all of this kind of brings me to that perspective. If we read St. Paul in Romans chapter 8, I think we get a glimpse of where Our Lady's mindset would have been when it came to being able to have that trust in that unwavering peace and joy. In fact, if we just read for just a moment some of the words from St. Paul in Romans chapter 8, I think that when I read this passage, I really do believe that this is the joy that we should seek after. This is the joy we want. This is the joy that Our Lady had, and many of the saints had, that led them to be able to face martyrdom, that led them to be able to do things such as we were discussing St. Mother Teresa here just a little bit ago with Reggie Littlejohn, to be able to care for the sick and the dying, those who are suffering and dying from leprosy. This is where we see Scripture is so important. Scripture is the inspired word of God that helps us to have hope, to see it with a perspective that is not our own, that is not human, that is not a diseased view of the human person as we were talking about. So let's ponder for just a moment the words of St. Paul in Romans chapter 8. He says, "For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor principalities, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord." What he's saying in this passage, St. Paul's saying, there's nothing in life, whether it's our death, the death of others, the life and death of others, whether it's when he discusses angels, principalities, that is, he's talking about angels, but is also, remember, the demons are fallen angels, that nothing that happens in this present moment or in the days to come, no matter of the who's in control, who has power, where we are in our state in life, that no matter what, if we are abiding in Christ, we will be able to endure. Now, this is significant as I want to touch on a study that recently came out. The study is one that has addressed what are people's mindsets today in a post-COVID world, after many of the lockdowns that we face, and even in the face of what we experience today, what is the attitude among the unmarried about marriage one day? And what is the attitude among those who do not have children about having children? And we see a very fascinating study coming out of the Institute for Family Studies and the Wheatley Institute. It's called The Divided State of Our Unions, Family Formation in Post-COVID-19 America. And there have been some intriguing elements there. We've seen that overall, after COVID, and the study was done in September and another one back in June, I believe, earlier this year, that the desire to marry has actually increased among the unmarried, and the desire to have children has actually decreased among those who do not have children. There are three significant influencers that have come out in this study, and those have to do with money, how much money a person has, hope, which ultimately we would root in faith in God, and the third is just an overall attitude about family as a whole, what we believe about family. Now, I think all of this is significant in light of the conversation we're just having about joy in Romans 8 and St. Paul, and talking about how, you know, nothing can shake us, nothing should be able to move us, past, present, future, you know, human life, our encounters with them, or even, you know, the struggle in the spiritual realm, that all of this, it shouldn't matter if we are rooted in Christ. Well, I think that that's part of what's fascinating about this study, because it looks at people of faith versus no faith, Republican versus Democrat, and it also looks at people based on income status. And what was fascinating is if we actually look at people of faith, we see studies showing consistently in the face of the last 2 years we've lived through that it's been people of consistent and more regular faith practices who have not suffered on the same level that the rest of society has when it's come to depression and anxiety and overall isolation and change in state of life over the last 2 years. And we see this also reflected in the hope and intentions about marriage and family. So what we saw in this study is that people who have an income over $100,000 or more, there was little to no change in their attitudes about marrying and having children. However, what we saw is that marriage attitudes have changed quite a bit over the last 2 years for specifically people of who are Republican versus Democrat, and even a little bit among the religious. Overall, we've seen across the board that people are less interested in having children, whether it be people of faith or on the political spectrum. And we're also seeing that these same groups, that is, those who are people of faith and actually specifically Republican, are a little more interested in marrying. So again, kind of just to summarize big picture, because it's two separate ideas. There's overall this increase toward the desire to marry and a decrease for children. Even among people of faith, we see this little, you know, caveat. And the reason I want to bring this up here is that this shows a reflection of what's happening in society. There's a polarization between Republicans being more likely to marry and have children, Democrats being less likely, people of faith being more likely to have children and marry, and those who are not of faith being less likely to have children and marry. What does this all come down to? I think that the big takeaway, especially in the face of Christmas coming and the celebration of Christmas and family members who are married, unmarried, don't have children, that as people of faith, we need to be prepared to set an example of hope in a culture that has been so polarized and so faithless that it's significantly impacting the future of children and of marriage. While many people are more interested in marrying, it's due to isolation. And we have to be able to provide the example, the role models, and the encouragement that people need today to understand that marriage is possible. Easy? No. Possible? Yes. A great gift to life? A transformation of life? Yes, but so are children. And as we see that perhaps we may see ongoing trends of fewer children and fewer marriages, that continues to be the trajectory of the nation and has spiked even during COVID, and these attitudes, that we have to be prepared if this is the culture and if this is the direction that some people may take when it comes to family, that we're providing communities and examples and welcome people into our homes to set a different story, to help them to be open to the idea and the gift of family, of sacrificial love, seeing the family, and to kindle this fire of desire among others as well this Christmas. This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Wednesday, I'm joined by Jim O'Day, the Executive Director of Integrity Restored. We're going to discuss the risk today surrounding human trafficking and our children. This continues to grow and be an issue, especially in the face of culture that struggles with pornography. If you or someone you love is struggling with pornography, we'll talk about solutions and real help that's available. Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.